Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Your sports team got you upset? Let it out with us.
Bob and Jeff, the drive afternoons at 4 on KFH. 1240 AM, 97.5 FM.
Your sports station.
All right, good job, ALEXA, picking the music randomly this week. This is Paint It Black, of course, by the Rolling Stones. Jesse Newell joins us on the hotline from the Kansas City Star. Jesse, you've been getting some work in on the Royals, so let's start with the Royals, who got off to a really not good start. But over the weekend, they rebounded, hit the ball extremely well, pitched well against a team that had looked like maybe one of the two best in the American League, the Twins. What did you see in the Royals over the weekend? And welcome.
Yeah. Good things after, as you mentioned, really bad things. You know, it's weird that when they started early and there were some, you know, bad things going on, they were trying to get the rotation, a bunch of guys either with COVID or injured in the starting rotation, there were a few positive things, but you really had to sort of squint to see it. You know, they had the bullpen, some of the pieces were pitching well, and Mike Matheny, so far, I'd give him an A grade just because he seems to be using those guys in the right spots and understanding high leverage situations where, hey, if you've got a situation in the fifth or the sixth that's really important, you can bring in any pitcher and use them in that spot. So you really had to squint, but once the bats came together, I think it was that Friday night game when they just won in that blowout fashion, it seemed like the confidence built. And it's crazy that what happens with this season is, when 8 of 15 teams in the league make the playoffs, I mean, you're not out of it. And that was one of those stories I wrote last week. I know a lot of people were chuckling over it or rolling their eyes at me. You know, hey, the Royals at 3-9, they're not out of the playoff chase. But it's true. I mean, it just is true, because if you have 8 teams going, you don't have to be that great to make the playoffs. And we're not talking about a great spot. But, hey, could you get a 3-game series at the Yankees to play the one seed? And you only have to be maybe .500, probably not even that, to make that sort of series. So the Royals really increase their chances there, and they increase their chances of making this thing sort of interesting down the stretch. So that's a great sign, and we'll see if the bats can continue. They have been so unclutched so far this season. You'd think that would turn around a little bit too, but so far the young pitchers, the young starting pitchers, Bubich and Singer, along with Duffy's pitching okay, and Keller came back, and Junis is back, and then the bullpen, the Royals just might have something there.
Yeah, as a Yankee fan, I have to say, you're not making me feel very good about that 3-game series against a .500 team. I wanted to kind of ask you about the direction of the team in general. You know, looking at the age of some of the guys, obviously there's a youth movement going on both in the lineup and in the rotation in some ways, but you still have some holdovers. You have 36-year-old Alex Gordon, and you have Salvi Perez, and you have 31-year-old Duffy, and just kind of what's the feeling about kind of the changing of the guard? How many of those guys are going to be on the next good Royals team, would you say?
Yeah, probably not many. And it's sort of that transition time where you keep those assets. Obviously, it's a little bit tougher to trade them if they have a little bit more on their salary, especially Duffy. I know there's been whispers about them trying to trade Duffy in the past, but his performance hasn't matched. He's actually, his performance this year has been better than it has in a couple of years past. He's just been sort of snake bit. He doesn't strand many runners, and then last game he got bit by the long ball pretty bad. But you know, with those, you sort of are it's always kind of massaging the roster in two different directions. You know, you're trying to have assets. You're trying to have things that potentially could be trade pieces or, hey, in this one crazy season, maybe they help you to an unlikely playoff run with a 27-33 record or whatever. And then the other ones you try to bring along. And, you know, sometimes just those guys are placeholders. You know, they are placeholders so that you don't have to bring up guys before they're ready. You know, an example would be for the Royals. You know, Khalil Lee is one of their outfielders in the minors that potentially could help them very soon. But if you resign an Alex Gordon, and again, maybe Alex Gordon gets to call his own shots a little bit with the organization since he's been there the whole time and obviously has led them to some great times. But if you have him in left, you're less likely to want to have to completely hurry somebody up to the majors if they're not ready yet. So, yeah, it's kind of a balancing act. And for the Royals, some of those contracts will expire. And when that happens, then they'll have a little bit more financial freedom to go out and potentially pick up some free agent pieces to fill in the holes that they need. But in the meantime, you know, those guys have performed pretty well. And you want to talk about Salvi, man, coming back from not only Tommy John surgery, but also COVID at the beginning of this year. He's looked great. He's hit about as well in the first 2 or 3 weeks here as he has at any point as a Royal. So, yeah, if those guys continue to be hot, it's, you know, it's not going to matter us talking about, hey, who's a veteran, who's part of the future, because, like I said, they could sneak into the playoff race here and make things interesting down the stretch, and all of a sudden you have kind of a pretty special memory in what has kind of been this crazy sort of 2020.
All right, enough of the normal sports talk, because that just doesn't feel right in 2020 to be having a normal conversation about sports. So let's turn to college football, which is squarely in the news right now. Conference presidents and commissioners and coaches and players all weighing in on what they think should happen with college football. I am not smart enough to wrap my head around all of it. There are so many mitigating factors involved here. We got to listen to the health experts as well. Sounds like the Big Ten might be on the verge of saying it's a no-go. Sounds like the ACC is maybe trying to hold up a little bit and put on the brakes before they call it a season. I know the Big 12 hierarchy is meeting soon. What are you expecting, Jesse?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think from what you've read, I think you're pretty much on point here. It seems like there are different factions here, and nobody really is in complete full agreement when it comes to the Power Five, because, you know, we mentioned the MAC, they're not playing, Division II, not playing, Division III, not playing. And it's just so difficult because, as you mentioned, in some of these pro sports, you know, you kind of sign up for the potential risk that's there because you're part of a union and you can negotiate and you can opt out, where with college kids, it's just not that. You know what I mean? They're getting college education, but they are not. This is still amateurism. You know what I mean? These are still student athletes. Obviously, a lot of them have become very vocal lately to say that they still want to play, but that doesn't forgive any of these colleges from potential liability if any of these kids got seriously sick and, you know, and potentially had long-ranging ramifications from trying to play football this year. So that's really where the trouble lies. And I think not only do you have the faction of players and coaches, and a lot of them being very vocal to say that they want to play, and then the athletic directors who are obviously looking at their bottom line and saying, hey, if there's no football, that's at least half the budget. And obviously that is going to be crushing for athletic departments who function year to year. But I think the bigger problem is now you have athletic directors thinking one thing, but this is going to come down to the presidents and the chancellors too. I mean, Kansas is a perfect example. Kansas's chancellor is Douglas Girard. He's a doctor. You know what I mean? Like, he's done so many things for Kansas to link them up with the University of Kansas health system and to kind of have both of those entities working together. And they've even gone a step further to put all of their trainers and athletic personnel and strength coaches, all of those people now report to medical professionals. Now, they don't report directly to the coaches. And that's something Douglas Girard did that's been lauded from the top of the NCAA on down, basically to say, hey, you're doing a great job considering the welfare of your athletes. Douglas Girard's going to be the one that has to look everybody in the eye and say, yeah, I'm fine doing this. I feel good doing this. I think that there is not the liability or the risk to send these kids out there and play football, especially when we know that the testing is not going to be as rigorous as it is in all of these pro sports where, you know, like baseball, they test them every single day. And that's kind of where it's interesting, you know, with the Marlins. You know, the Marlins got highly criticized when they had 4 cases and they continued to play, and then, you know, went to 13 and went to 17, and then finally they shut it down for a few days. Well, I think, you know, most of these Power 5 conferences are basically saying, hey, that the protocol is going to be you have to test these kids at least once a week. But it's interesting because, you know, I'm assuming you're in a test right before the game or a couple days before the game. You could have 0 cases then, and then just like the Marlins case, you could go from 0 to 4 to many, many very quickly, and if you're only testing once a week, you potentially could have an outbreak without really knowing that you have an outbreak. So I think those are the roadblocks. Those are the problems, and you also hear the medical personnel now talking about this. You know, I know there's an article that just popped up on ESPN.com talking about how we just don't know the long-term effects of this either, and potentially that some of the people that come down with COVID, a very rare number, a very small number, but potentially have long-ranging heart damage from this. And again, going back to liability, is that something that you want to be on the hook for if you're a Power 5 conference or potentially a school that gave the okay for these kids to go out there and play? So, listen, there's no right answers. There's no easy answers right now, and obviously that's why these decisions are so difficult to come by. And also, we're seeing kind of the friction and the problems with the NCAA not having a commissioner, on having one person in charge to make all the difficult decisions and have everybody kind of follow and play by the same rules. So basically, you have these conferences all out for themselves, and they're all saying different things, and they all have different motivations, and you're left with a pretty big mess. So I expect the news cycle will continue to change the next 24 hours, 48 hours, but that's probably the best way to put it right now. It's a mess. It seems like, as you mentioned, the SEC and ACC seem pretty determined to play. The Big Ten and Pac-12 seem pretty determined not to play. And the Big 12 is kind of somewhere in the middle, trying to figure out exactly which side it wants to go with. But could we have a potential where only 2 or 3 power conferences decide they want to play their own game and they take their ball and they play amongst themselves? I guess so. But that would be pretty crazy. And again, that would be at least risky on that side, just knowing that some of these other power conferences had shut it down because of the potential risk out there.
Jesse, that's kind of where, you know, you kind of landed on my question in terms of it being a big mess, but also the different motivations that you mentioned in terms of presidents versus athletic directors versus players versus coaches versus conferences. Do you see this as being a cooler heads will prevail situation and a consensus, or do you see that we're going to go into the next month with politicizing of this issue with just a big giant mess? Is that do you see some clarity coming?
I don't know. It's been so crazy because about, you know, noon on Saturday, it seemed like this whole thing was probably going to be shut down by Monday and that everybody was just going to be in lockstep. But I think because it happened over the weekend, there was some pushback and there were some people saying, well, why is this happening? And I think what's a little bit, I don't know if dangerous is the word here, like I said before, there are obviously a lot of players, and rightfully so, a lot of players who have been vocal about they just want to play. They want to play football. And, like, I get it. I mean, I understand we all want to have our normal lives. I'm sure that Udoka Azubuike and Devon Dotson wanted to play the NCAA tournament. You know, that's not the way it turned out. But, of course, they want to play. I just think it's difficult to get the true thoughts of these athletes because, as we know, their voices are usually the last ones heard. And their opinions are the ones that – are kind of spoken for in this process. Usually, you know, they kind of have to go with the flow because they're not atop the power structure here. They're sort of at the bottom of the power structure. And that's where some of these, you know, demands that they have is kind of a new thing where these Power 5 conferences aren't used to that. And the name, image, likeness, you know, the NCAA keeps fighting it to make sure that they can only make money in these certain instances when really it seems like they should be like treated like any other college kid and be able to make money off their name, image, likeness. So, you know, just to give an example, I was talking to an assistant coach for a team, and he told me that their athletic director had kind of gathered the team without any coaches there and kind of done a straw poll, basically, raise your hand if you feel safe playing football this year. And again, all these kids are already at practice. All these kids are already working out. And when they got honest with the athletic director, I guess it was not a majority that raised their hand. You know what I mean? So that's what again, I don't know if the word's dangerous. I just these decisions right now are being made by exactly the people I just talked about, the president and the chancellors and the athletic directors and the coaches. We've seen very vocal today, Scott Frost and Ryan Day coming out and saying, play football. Everybody wants to play football. When in reality, I don't, again, I just hope that we all consider the bigger picture here. And I hope that these players, whether they are able to speak up or whether they are free to speak up or feel like they can speak up, are able to be heard in this matter, when a lot of times in the past, this is kind of a situation where their voices haven't been heard and they kind of march along to whatever they've been told. So we'll see. Again, maybe that's one example out of many. Maybe a lot of players actually do want to play and really don't care about the risk. But like I said, I can understand players wanting to play. Like I said, we all want to go back to real life. But at a certain point, there are adult decisions that need to be made and people that need to understand all the consequences before they rush into action. And so I think that's part of the reason that it's a sort of a stalemate right now, and everybody's kind of looking at each other waiting for the first move. And there have been a few first moves, but as far as the Power Five conferences go, a lot of standing around and still kind of looking around waiting for somebody else to figure out what's going to happen.
And just as we've been talking to you, the Mountain West has decided to postpone its fall football season. They hope to play in the spring. That comes from Nicole Arbach on from The Athletic. So, Jesse, strange times. Continued good luck in your coverage of the Royals and following what's going on with football at KU and everything you're doing. Thanks for being on with us.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
All right. Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Yeah, no Mountain West football. There's another domino. We will be back. We'll talk with Cheney Diamond Dogs infielder Corrigan Bartlett. Cheney, of course, in the championship game of the NBC World Series this evening out at X Stadium. First game at 6. If Cheney wins, there's a championship game following that against the Santa Barbara Foresters from California. Back in a minute, Bob Lutz, Jamin Anderson, a Monday edition of The Drive.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.